Hello and welcome to the Bibling and Babbling podcast. My name is Luke Simmons and I'm joined by Connor Hyde. Connor, how's it going?
Dude, it's good. It's fun to be doing this again. I feel like we finished that last episode and you were just kind of like, "Man, that was too fun." I was like, "Man, that was too fun." And we've got to give it another go. And so we're back sooner than a month.
I was just thinking that.
We were planning to do one podcast a month, but I don't know, maybe it's been like 3 weeks.
3 weeks to the day, I was just like, afterwards, I was like, man, thinking of all the ideas of what we could talk about next. And I was so pumped up and fired up. And then I was just like, Connor, let's do it sooner than a month because why wait? We've got some time.
Yeah, so we
Let's just
figured it
make
out
it
by a
work.
week. So we're doing good,
We're doing
I'd
good.
say.
We're doing good. And so in that thought of, what should we talk about next? I was thinking about our last one, listening to it, and kind of one of the things that came out of our testimonies was the thought of grace, God's grace in our lives. And so I thought it would be a good idea to just kind of expand on that, explain it a little bit, and really just we're talking a little bit beforehand about grace, and it's just like we just get so excited about it because God's grace is truly like it's kind of crazy. It's fun to think about, and yeah, so we're excited to share that with anyone listening, and yeah. So
Totally.
to start, in it, what I was kind of when I was approaching it, I was like thinking about, why do we need God's grace? Like, why is it necessary? So, where I landed was the fall, Genesis 3. So, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this story, but it's Adam and Eve in the garden. We don't necessarily know exactly how long after creation this takes place, but Adam and Eve, the first man and the first woman created by God. In God's image, they're in the Garden of Eden. They're without sin, but they are tempted by Satan, who is a serpent in this story. Eve is offered fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, by Satan. And this is a tree that they were commanded to not eat from by God. But there's kind of, do you have it there, Connor? Do you want to read kind of some of the interaction between Eve and Satan, the serpent?
Yeah, totally. I just was like, oh, I don't even have my Bible beside me, so now I'm flipping to
Sorry, I thought you had it ready.
it. Yeah, no, let me go back here. Yeah, it's kind of at the beginning of chapter 3 there. And the serpent, it describes the serpent as being more crafty than any other beast of the field. And so he comes to Eve and he says, like, did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? Verse 2, and the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent's response, he says, you will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. They sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths. So yeah, just this, like, I don't know, crazy interaction, which, like, I don't know, but side note, and I might just end up on a bunch of tangents tonight as I think about all of this, but it's like
Great.
so easy to kind of just like judge that moment and be like, man, what was Eve thinking? Like, and so easy to kind of be like, surely if I was in that situation, I would have been able to see clearly what was happening there.
Yeah.
But in reality, like, we know that we kind of find ourselves in situations like this really on the daily, where it's like, man, God has clearly told us what is best for us, and we doubt it.
Yeah. I even I I feel like it was talked about a lot when we were in school. The idea of like when you're a kid and your mom bakes some cookies or even just buys cookies from the store, and she's like, you're not allowed to eat these. These are for your lunch or these are for after dinner. But of course, you're just like, it's just a cookie. I want a cookie so bad. Like, really, like, that's essentially what it is. It's one fruit that it's like, we're not supposed to eat it. Oh, but look how good it looks. Look how promising it could be. And what it's led to is the world falling into sin, which is kind of crazy. So that's kind of our starting point, which
It
seems a little bit bleak, but honestly, that's kind of the point of God's grace, is to see how kind of hopeless and bleak we are in and of ourselves and left to our own devices. And that's where God's grace comes in and is so, yeah, just so spectacular.
Oh, totally. Well, and I don't know, maybe I'm jumping ahead, and if I am, you can tell me. I feel like I'm just the color commentator to thoughts from you that I don't quite yet know where you're going, but like it's in this story, like it's in this chapter, that we kind of get that first glimpse, like, of God's grace, like even just through him like making clothes for Adam and Eve, right? Like that last verse I just read, like they knew that they were naked, they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths. Like there's this like immediate response of like shame and like trying to cover themselves up, which is what we kind of do if we go take that cookie,
So
right?
true. We're trying to cover
Yeah, we're
up.
gonna tell a lie, or we're gonna place the blame on like our siblings, or we're gonna use the excuse that we were really hungry or something like that. Like somehow we're gonna try and cover up this, like, knowing that we've done something wrong. And then we have like verse 20, or verse 21, where it says, like, and the Lord God made for Adam and his wife garments of skin and clothed them. And it's like, well, where was skin gonna come from but from, an animal who was in the midst of this garden? And so we just get this like picture of grace. We get this picture of atonement, right? Where blood is actually shed. Probably for the first time here, like on behalf of Adam and Eve. And so just this picture of the fact that, like, oh, God is already moving in his grace, like, for them. And obviously there's punishment, right? Like there's the curse that's kind of put on the woman, and the curse that's then put on mankind. But it's just so cool that in this chapter where, like you said, like mankind is just being like sin has entered into the world, mankind is being plunged into it. And yet already we're getting this glimpse of like a God who cares in the midst of that, and who isn't just leaving his creation to face the full consequences of it. There are consequences of it, but he shows that he's there in the midst of it.
He doesn't leave us in our filth and in our sin, in our disobedience.
Yeah, and even just in that shame, right? Like just in that, like, I'm gonna try and like just cover this for myself.
I can fix it.
Yeah, totally. And he's just so clearly like, no, I will make a covering for you. It's cool. It's
And I
so cool.
think it shows like our human like bent and tendency to want to have control, to want to be able to fix things ourselves, our own pride that plays into it, and all of these things like it's because of our nature of sin. But God walks alongside us and is like let me take this for you. And like you said, with the sacrifices of just the garments to start with, to cover, as they now see that they're naked, it requires a sacrifice. And God shows us, grace through his covenants throughout the Old Testament with The Jewish people being the chosen people of God, like Israel, through circumcision, and then, through the sacrifices on the altar, to atone for our sins. And they had to do it regularly all the time
Yes.
with the animals because there wasn't that perfect sacrifice.
Totally, totally. Yeah, and like we talk a lot in like even our worship classes now of just like Matt, like how exhausting like that must have been. But really, like that's the narrative that we're getting from the Old Testament, right? Is this piece that like, all right, like man tries to do it on their own. God makes a way for them to receive like forgiveness. But it's like this like ongoing just like cycle. And there's constantly like God providing something and yet his people being like, no, we want something else. Like God making a way and then being like, no, we want something else. And even in that sacrificial system, right? It's like this ongoing, like all of these like rules, all of these like regulations around how it had to happen. Like just so many restrictions and so many like just things that feel kind of impossible to hold up to, which is kind of the point. It's like the fact that they had to keep coming back and keep offering up sacrifices like again and again, which is just a messy process to begin with.
You just like they're killing these animals all the time, spilling their blood. So like, I mean, I'm not a scholar, so I don't know the exact details, and I haven't read the stories in a while, but
Yeah.
it seems like it's gonna be pretty regular
Yes.
that they're offering sacrifices. And obviously there's like the Day of Atonement, or where like once a day the priest goes into the holies of holies in the tabernacle and does an offering, but that's not the only offering that's taking place once a year. But then we see, in the New Testament, it's fulfilled. All of these things, all of the Old Testament is just fulfilled in Jesus Christ. I was looking in one of my Bible dictionary books as I was getting ready for this, and just kind of looking at the definition of grace, and it was kind of cool seeing the difference between how it talks about it in the Old Testament and New Testament. And the one sentence I wrote down is it's God's unmerited favor toward humanity, and especially his people, realized through the covenants and fulfilled through Jesus Christ, which is, that's the culmination that we arrive at.
Totally, like a once and for all, like it is done, it is finished sacrifice. That means, yeah, that we're not consistently going back to the altar, right? And sacrificing another animal in that sense. And so, yeah, it is pretty amazing. Yeah, well, and really, it's just like grace. Kind of, I was trying to think of just like, man, like, what is it put simply? And it's really just like receiving something like I don't deserve, right? And it's really just like God's undeserved kindness to us. It would like that's God's grace for us. Like we can show others grace, though it's pretty imperfect at times, but like God's perfect grace for us is just his undeserved kindness that's just present through, I don't know, so many different aspects of life, ultimately in salvation through Christ, but so evident in a lot of ways as well.
It's so crazy. Sometimes I just sit there and I think about it. And then, we talk about how it is Jesus, and he is perfect. God sent him to earth. Jesus did it in obedience, being fully God, but yet surrendering that to be fully man. So the life that he lived, like, it's not that he was, whenever he wanted, could just like, I mean, he could snap his fingers and have whatever he wanted. We see that in some of the stories where Satan's trying to tempt him to turn the rocks into bread and stuff like that. But he is fully submitted to being fully confined by man. So he, grew up and learned stuff. He wasn't necessarily all knowing as like a 3-year-old. You know, he submitted himself to the manness, the humanness, to have to, you know, learn and things like that. Which when I think about that, I'm just like,
yeah, a perfect sinless life.
Having siblings and all those arguments. And it would be so annoying being like Jesus' sibling, because you're trying to annoy him or whatever, and he always has like an unsinful response.
Totally.
I cannot imagine that wouldn't be frustrating for a sinner.
Oh, absolutely. No, I see that in relationship with my siblings, where it's like, oh man, if they try and even just like act like they're not at fault in a situation, like that actually will probably just get me more mad.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have like Jesus, who was actually never at like fault in the situation, was never like sinful in his decision making or in his words. And I'm just like, nah, that would have just got me like more riled up probably.
Oh, yeah. It's just the worst.
Okay, I'm curious though, because like I feel like we both have talked about and maybe it's more of just a summarizing from last episode, but we both talked about how like grace was a piece for us in our testimonies, that like and just our walk in you know, surrendering to Christ, grace was a piece that didn't click for us necessarily right away. Like, what you want to remind me or remind those who are listening what that kind of looked like for you?
Yeah, I like you're talking specifically that click moment of grace.
Yeah, or even if it happens slowly, but just what wasn't connecting, what dots weren't connecting about God's grace in your life?
I think when people would talk about, you know, there is like, obviously, you know, it's a lot of work and it's sacrifice to follow God, but at the same time there's so much freedom in it. And so I think my big disconnect was, you know, I wanted to follow God so well, and I was, you know, trying to figure out like the best way to do it, 'cause my mind works very much in like black and white. This is what you do, this is what you don't do. And so I was just trying to figure out, I wanted the yes or no, do this, yes or no, do that. And trying to follow that and not realizing that, like, I was allowed to mess up. Like, I thought I couldn't fail. I thought I had to, like, be perfect to follow Jesus, or had to, you know, do everything to the best of my ability. But if the best of my ability wasn't really good, then it wasn't good enough. So it was very much like I had to do everything to follow God, when in reality, like we just talked about, God's done it already. Jesus lived a perfect life, died on the cross for us, he's bought us, he's paid for us with his blood, and we don't have to earn it. Because in our faith, you know, if we surrender our lives to Christ and we believe that that's truly worked, if Jesus has truly bought us, then we belong to him. And so I think, I mean, honestly, I don't think I was actually saved until probably my second year of Miller. And I don't think like grace really started to kind of sink in. It's just been in like the last little while where it's really like really sunk in, where I've started to feel more relaxed to like just live and not put so much pressure on myself.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a process, because that's what following God is. You don't suddenly believe in God and then you arrive and it's all figured out.
Totally.
But yeah, the concept of grace, like, I mean, even with my wife, just kind of working through that with each other, where it's like you don't have to be perfect for me,
yeah,
and I don't have to be perfect for you, because that's not that's not how you operate a relationship, which is exactly what our, like, we're in a relationship with God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously he is perfect, but he doesn't expect us to be perfect. He knows we're not going to be perfect.
He knows we can't be.
So he's provided, you know, the ultimate sacrifice so that we don't have to be.
Yes, totally. Well, because really, like, anything less than perfection for God, like, is deserving of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like that's really where, like, the rubber kind of meets the road a little bit, where it's like, oh, it's not even a matter of like, oh shoot, like I kind of messed up today, or like, I'm not quite at that standard of perfection yet. It's like, oh, like, anything that falls short, and like, we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Mm-hmm. We've fallen short of his perfect standard of holiness. And it is because, like, it's anything that falls short that's worthy of eternal separation from him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, that's the piece that just makes, like, grace so incredible, is because it's like, oh, like, without it, like, by my own merit, like, I am, like, on my way to hell.
My absolute best
is
still is not,
not
even
that great.
Close to
not
goodness.
That great.
What's that verse, like, my best deeds are like filthy rags?
Mm-hmm.
Which I've listened to you preach a sermon on it, where it's that filthy rags is literally like, what is it, like, crap rags?
Yeah, I think it's a little more harsh, honestly.
Wow.
Which I don't know, we could offer a full explanation, I guess, but a menstrual rag would be like,
okay,
what that's like actually kind of referring to is that it's like, it is like something no one wants to touch. It is absolutely disgusting. So yeah. Worse than crap rags, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's,
anyways, I was like,
that's the best.
Oh, we should just give that explanation.
That's the best we can do.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the
literally
best we have to offer. Which, when you think about it like that, like, when that's what we're presenting before God, it's like, here, God, here's my best.
Yeah.
And he just compares it to menstrual rags. Like, if that doesn't tell you how not worthy we are, then I don't know what will. But then, like, we don't stay there. And I think that's, like, the biggest thing. And the biggest thing I think we take away from all of this, and we want, you know, anyone listening to take away from this, is you're giving God menstrual rags, but you don't stay there because of his grace.
Yes, and to try and earn that on your own is, number one, impossible, and number two, exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, exhausting because it's impossible. I don't know though, dude. It's like, yeah, we still try.
Oh yeah.
Like, I still try. Like,
100%.
That was like my disconnect of grace, was thinking that like I had to behave or act in a certain way to gain God's favor. And like I still catch myself in that like thought pattern like so often.
When do you feel like it started to like click, or like you started to kind of be like, oh
yeah, like back to my testimony from episode 1 of 2 now, it was like a mentor I had in YOM, who, as I was kind of sharing my testimony, kind of caught that I was just like, oh, you're talking a lot about like what you're doing.
Mm.
You're talking a lot about what like a standard you're trying to uphold. And he was basically just like, do you think you understand grace? And I kind of had to like stop, and like, grace was the word I'd heard for sure. And like, you know, could
common Christianese.
100%. Yeah. And give you verses on it. Right. And like, by grace, you have been saved. This is not a result of your own doing, which really that should have helped me kind of click things together in that moment. But it's like, oh,
rushed over that part.
Well, I mean, like, you sometimes you just really can like, you can recite things without actually letting the truths of it reach your heart, right? And I think that's an example of that, where it's like, oh man, if I actually would have left the truth of a verse like that, you know, I probably had to memorize in Sunday school at like 7 years old.
Mm.
But That just had hit my heart, and God used that person, that mentor in my life, just to kind of reveal that it's like, oh, like I thought I knew what this was, but I have not been actually living like I have understanding of it. And so I think that's when it started to shift, and when I started to like kind of be able to catch myself in that a little bit, or really like God's grace to me helped me catch that. But yeah, I think that's when that shift started. But like I said, a thought pattern I find myself in constantly. And I think even just serving in church and working in ministry, honestly, like so often, like I don't know, it doesn't encourage that mindset, but it kind of creates a lot of opportunity that allows for that mindset, because you so often in ministry can feel like you are doing things for God, like you are building the kingdom, which like we're called to build his kingdom, but not for our own glory, certainly, and also not without him. And I can often like do both of those things, like try and be building his kingdom for my own glory and try and be building his kingdom like on my own.
Where it could be easy to like all the stuff you're doing, people start to hear like, oh man, that Connor guy, he's awesome. And your name spreads and gets bigger and bigger. And it can
Oh
quickly
man.
become the, all about
Yeah.
ourselves, right?
Oh,
In
totally.
those things.
Totally. I mean, yeah, another tangent, but it's really like that's where we get like into the dangers of like celebrity church culture, celebrity leaders, right? It's are these people who are pulled from serving the Lord to really like building their own name. Like,
Yeah,
and
are they?
on the back of the grace of God, which is like brutal. And like even as you say that, like and kind of talk about it, I'm just like, oh man, like I just you just kind of like hear that, and it's just like, Lord, like let that not be me. Like
Yeah, don't let me be the one who is either just following someone instead of God or
yes.
having people just follow me instead of God.
Yes. And also like if I kind of think that I'm beyond that, like it's probably an indication that like I'm already on my way there. Like if I think like, oh, that won't ever be me, or no, there's no chance like that I would ever abuse like the grace of God to build my own name, to build my own ministry, to be successful in something that I get credit for. If we kind of think that we're beyond that, it's probably a good indicator that we might already be on actually the way to that.
I couldn't find it, but I was looking for when I think it's Paul, he's talking about he's kind of calling out a church for being like, some of you say, like, I think it's, I learned from Apollos and I learned from Paul. Do you remember? Oh, he's typing. He's looking it up.
I don't remember exactly where that is either.
Connor and I will not pretend to be scholars, and maybe you can say that we should have been more prepared. I also didn't think that this is where we were going to land
Yeah, I know. This
in our
that's my bad.
conversation. So, but that's the whole point of us doing this is we want to bring up
One of the students,
different things.
not really called me out this week, but he was talking about a verse, and like I find I do this so often where it's like I have a fragment of a verse in my head, and I'm like, and I don't actually know where that is. And so we were talking about this verse, don't even remember what it was. But he just was like, oh wow, he's like, I'm so glad to see that you graduated Bible school and you still have to Google Bible verses. But I was like, we're doing all of the time. Isn't this like, I forget even what your point was, but it's like for when one says I follow Paul, the other I follow Apollos, are you not being merely human? What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the word assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants or nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth.
Bingo.
Boom. 1 Corinthians 3:4
Perfect.
to 7.
Amazing. And yeah, that is exactly it. And I think like we talked about this in our first episode where, you know, our goal in this is like honestly, we're just beggars trying to help other beggars know where to find bread.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, you work in ministry every day, and so that is like a that mindset of Lord, help me do this for you and not for my own glory or my own namesake. I mean, I don't know your process in that because I don't have a process necessarily on a daily basis, and I don't know if you do too, or of like that, Lord, help me not do this for me, or help me not do it for my
Right,
namesake,
right.
that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm trying to decide if this is just like my go-to answer, if this is actually what I do in those situations. I mean, I definitely don't always do it this perfectly, but like, I think the, you know, again, Miller, this is like a Steve Jans special, but definitely didn't originate with him necessarily. But this idea of like preaching the gospel to yourself daily, like there's that, and specifically in like se the sense of like fighting pride, fighting that like desire that like, oh, I would make myself great, I think comes in like the like confession, the acknowledgement of like who I actually am before God. And that kind of first takes looking to God, who God is, right? And as we reflect on God's holiness, God's perfect character, like that every single one of his attributes is perfect and whole. Like you shouldn't be able to help but see how you fall short of that,
Right.
right? And so, like in that battle of pride or pursuing like your own glory, it's really like to look on the one who's so much more glorious. And again, I think like God's grace to us, like, is that he helps us to see ourselves accurately, in light of him. So we see that we're sinners, we see that we're guilty, we see that under, you know, like under the law we're condemned, like under the way that God has called us to live, we fall short. And so that brings a sense of like humility. But that's where we also then look to the assurance of the cross. And we see that, yes, like me, I, Connor Hyde, in myself, like am nothing before the Lord, except for the fact that the Christ, the blood of Christ, like has been spilt on my behalf. And like that now I've been brought, I've been adopted into the family of God. I have identity with Christ, who's justified me and freed me from my sins. And that is what God the Father sees when he looks on me, is he sees
Christ
the work of Christ.
righteousness.
Yeah, he sees Christ's righteousness. And so, yeah, it's the importance of confession, really. And I mean, we're talking about grace here, and so I know we're kind of like zigzagging around, and I'm realizing we're not on video, so nobody can see my hands zigzagging around, but we're zigzagging.
Maybe one day.
One day, yeah, Luke's building us a podcast studio. I'm pumped
Something
about
like
it.
that. Something like
Something like
that.
that, slash, another,
Slash Lego room,
yeah,
slash, you know.
like nap space.
Yeah. The rocking chair that's in there right now, I have napped in before.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a pretty good nap. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't know if I could nap like sitting up like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd
Once
be
you get a little
challenged.
rock going, it's just like,
Yeah, just lulls you right to
yeah.
sleep.
Especially when you're a college student and you're just tired for no good reason.
That's
It's just
true.
like, okay, I'll sleep wherever.
You had a lot of dorm naps in that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I believe it.
Yeah.
Anyways, Grace.
So
Zigzag.
on, yes, what you kind of brought up before we started recording was the idea of common grace and saving grace.
Yeah.
I think we've talked quite a lot about saving grace,
Yes.
and the reality of, you know, what Christ has done for us, why grace is necessary. You know, you have written here Romans 6:23.
Totally.
Pretty popular verse that a lot of, you know, we had kids memorize it at camp and stuff. For the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life through Christ Jesus our Lord. Yeah, that idea of the wages of sin is death.
Yeah, totally. So I think, like, the question is raised, like, if the wages of sin is death, if the wages of sin is death, then, like, why do non-believers, like, why do people who aren't following the Lord still experience good things? Like, if the wages of sin is death, like, if it's like, okay, you sin and you die, like, you should die, you will die, but, like, why doesn't that just kind of happen on the spot? Like, right, and even in the story of, like, Adam and Eve, it's like death is something that eventually do experience, and, like, all people do experience, but, like, why doesn't that even just happen immediately? It's like we're supposed to die if we sin. Like, if we sin, we should be struck down before the Lord. Like, so why doesn't that happen? And, like, even beyond that, like, forget, like, why are we still living, but why do we experience good things, like, or like what we do, we're under, you know, the saving grace of God, but, like, why would a non-believer still experience, like, good things,
have joy in their life?
Totally have, like, good relationships, like, have you know, like, I don't know, name it, like, some anything that's good. And why us in our sin, like, before we meet the Lord, like, why did we receive good things?
Family and relationship and
totally.
Even, yeah, just think about, I don't know, it makes me think about all the things in my life that I love so much that can so quickly distract me from God.
Yes.
Because that also is part of it too, where it's just like, there's a lot of really good things, but if those good things kind of, this is a bit of a tangent, but if those good things, you know, surpass the importance in our lives of God and our view of Him, and in our minds, like, you know, if I think that hockey is better than God, or I care more about hockey than I do God, there's a problem there.
Yes.
Or if I value, you know, working on one of my trucks in my garage, if that kind of stuff is a priority over my relationship with God, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being able to go to a hockey game together and have a good time, you know, that is part of God's common grace to be able to enjoy that. For me to,
and we recognize, like, as those who, like, know the Lord and who are understanding, like, growing in our understanding of His worth, like, we recognize that we make those other things idols.
Yes.
But, like, those other things are, like, they can still be good things.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly
like what you're saying with a hockey game. It's like, oh, that can be a good thing. And we recognize that it can become a bad thing. But it's like, okay, so why do the people who don't believe in God experience those things still as good things?
Right.
And, like, and the answer to that would be, like, common grace. Right. And so that's kind of what that is. And, like, Psalm 145 verse 9, which I only know the reference for because I looked it up ahead of time, is that the Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all He has made. Like, the Lord is good to all. There are good things that all experience. And it's just like, man, like, you don't have to look further than just, like, the world that's created around us to kind of, like, see that. And like, God's, like, common grace to us all is just, like, seen in, like, just the creativity, even, like, in which He created the world. Like, you just think of a sunrise, like, and how uneventful that could have been. Like, it could have been something that we never really even take note of. But yet, like, I mean, out here we don't get them too often, but I feel like a little shout out to my Alberta skies that I was born under.
Hey, we had a pretty nice sunrise. Like,
we did. I said they happen, not often.
Okay.
But I feel like Alberta maybe a little more often. but You know, yeah, you just said it, like we experienced a beautiful one, right? Like the sun rose and it wasn't just like, oh yeah, the sun's back. It's like, oh man, the sun's rising and it's like, look at these colors. Like,
Just
look.
announces itself.
Yeah, like look at how the light like reflects off the lake that we also get to live by. Like, look at how it shines through like the clouds, which just like somehow increases like the contrast of color. Like it's crazy. Like sunrises are so unreal. I wish I got up for more of them. But you know, it's like why do so many colors have to exist to begin with? Like, why is our world just not black and white, dull, boring? Like, you know, I think so many things, if we actually start to break them down, like don't get me started on food, like and how it is that like we can actually experience so many flavors, and you know that eating can be just such an event.
So joyous.
Like, again, it's like, man, we didn't like if God created our bodies to need nutrients and energy to be sustained, like he could have made that happen through
Just these flavorless
something boring.
Cliff bars,
Yeah.
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Just pucks of absolutely nothing.
Sustenance.
So pucks of sustenance.
Okay, on this thought, you know, we're talking about common grace. Where my mind went to is the way we kind of addressed it is very much in a, I'll say, pretty fortunate, and maybe uncommon setting of North America. Because, you know, my mind went to, I mean, there's so many crazy things going on in our world right now with, you know, wars in the Middle East, wars in Ukraine. There's famine, there's wars going on in Africa, and all these things. So, you know, it can be easy for us to sit here in our comfy homes where we have a lot of peace around us. We don't deal with, you know, a lot of big adversity and just say, like, man, like, God is so good. We get to enjoy him so much and all these things. The reality is, I think, you know, we can say that pretty easily when we are this comfortable. But I think sometimes I have to remember to, like, think about, you know, some people might view it and be like, well, God's common grace isn't very common when we look outside of North America, you know? Which I don't know if you, I haven't thought more about it and kind of where to go from there with that thought.
Yeah, no, it's such a fair statement in the sense that, yeah, it's if you look at our lives, it's hard to compare the difficulties we face with difficulties that we'd see present around the world. But if we trust in a God who is present in all places, if we trust in a God who, you know, declares his love for all people, I think like in that there's still no excuse. And again, it's hard because it's like, yeah, it does sound like much more calloused kind of sitting, like you said, like in the comfort of being here in North America. But you know, like God, like he says that even like for all people, like that he has revealed himself to them, that he has made his name known, that he has made his grace known. And so we might be able to come up with a lot of examples where it's like, well, where is it then? But I think it comes down to trusting in his word, that it's like, no, if God says he's revealed himself, if God says that he's showing this common grace to all, there's kind of a piece where it's like, okay, well, like, kind of who are we to say that, like, no, God, I don't think you are. You know, I'm not sure if that's actually true.
Right.
Which it is really it's a loaded conversation. I like, but my mind's just going to Romans 1, like as I kind of say this and stuff. But it's like, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. And so just this idea, this picture that like God has made himself known. And I mean, for sure, like it's, you know, somebody could respond to us and say, well, it's just like, oh, well, what do you know of those things? But like the thing is, we have the testimony of believers who are in those places, who are, you know, serving the Lord in the midst of these wars and crises and divides and all of these things. And we have, there are believers in the midst of those places, like in these like just terrible situations, who are saying like, no, we've seen who God is, and even in the chaos, we trust him. And so, yes, can be easy for us to say, but we can also look to, I think, just the witness of brothers and sisters around the world and be encouraged by seeing that it's like, oh, even in this, like, people are coming to faith. And then, you know, like, it can be trusted that, like, oh, God's actually using this, maybe for his purposes to bring people to know him. And yeah, I think it's just the reality that we've seen such a small, like, piece of the puzzle. You know, like, if we think of everything going on in the world, like, all these things that God we would believe is sovereign over, like, we really just catch the tiniest little piece of that. Of a world that God is so intricately working in.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, yeah, it is so true. And he sends us. That's the other part too, that's, you know, the Great Commission. And Miller just had their missions conference, and so you guys were hearing from different missionaries that represent different organizations all around the world. And that is like the reality is he calls us to go and to send people to all over the world. And it's been going on since Jesus was here. Like that's a command straight from him to his disciples, to spread that good news. And so there, you know, people are in these difficult places, sharing that good news. And you know, we look at this common grace, and it, like, common grace is good, and everyone's under common grace. But to be in those areas, in those difficulties, where maybe it's harder to see the common grace, I think that's where saving grace becomes so much more
Oh, man.
prevalent and so much more important and actually matters way more than the common grace that we get to experience every day. Obviously, we need him to sustain us for our every breath, and we can praise him for, you know, like you said, the beautiful sunrises and everything. But I, yeah, it's cool to think about, like, man, people are receiving saving grace, even in the midst of these horrible situations that you know, us, like you and I, can't really imagine or conceptualize. We don't have any experience to compare with some things that happen, but that doesn't mean that, you know, God isn't, like, we're not, I don't know what I'm trying to say, honestly.
Yeah, no, but, I forget. Like, I got kind of stopped on, like, one of your thoughts, which I think is such a good point, that it's, like, we, like, Canadians, like, this, like, post-Christian nation that we're living in, we are, I think, in a lot of ways, so much slower to recognize a need for saving grace in light of the absolute abundance that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas, like, and I think you even just can, you can see this in, like, in the state of, like, some churches, like, you can see this in the state of just how, like lukewarm we as believers can function often, where it's like, man, there's not necessarily, we don't live with a lot of risk, like, we live pretty safe, pretty comfortable lives. Not everyone, like, I don't want to blanket statement that by any means, but overarching, sometimes, like, there's this reality that it's like we're comfortable,
and that's what our culture tells us to do too. It's look out for yourself.
Yes,
you know, invest in yourself, make the most money so you can be as comfortable as you can.
Yeah.
And yeah,
and there is a piece where it's like, Matt, like, when we're actually in, like, you know, in these situations, in these countries we're talking about, which we're being really, like, general with, and I think that's okay, like, where maybe that common grace is not seen as clear. Like, you mentioned that it's just like, oh, like, that the need for saving grace can be a lot more apparent. And the reality is, like, churches around the world are thriving in the midst of persecution, and actually are stronger, I would say, than a lot of our North American churches, in light of the fact that, like, they have been brought to this place where they have no option but to recognize, like, the need for a God to rescue them, for God to rescue them. And that's something, like, our comfort can really blind us to, is that we need anything outside of ourselves, that we need the grace of God. And it's like, well, why do I need, like, God to save me from anything? Like, my life's pretty comfortable right now. Like,
I go to work, I make a paycheck, I buy things that I can,
yeah, I provide for myself. Like, why would I need,
yeah,
somebody else to provide anything for me? Never mind, like, someone else who's going to call me, like, to a certain way of living that I probably don't want to surrender to, because it's going to mean surrendering all these things that I've worked so hard to get for myself.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I, like, you know, as we talk about this, I'm looking at kind of some of the verses that I've jotted down to have in mind as we talk about it. And 2 Corinthians 12:9, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I was just reading through Philippians over this last month, and I love that book because it's Paul, the missionary, writing to a church, and just, you know, understanding that these missionaries, like Paul, the missionary, missionaries now, are putting themselves in places of weakness, like answering the call to be feeling powerless so that God can be made so much bigger, where it's like, you know, they're going into completely different cultures, learning the culture, learning the language, but they don't, like, it really is like we're not able to do that just on our own ability. You will burn out, you'll be exhausted, you need that the grace of God to sustain you through those things. But that's just what we're talking about, you know, where these churches in places that are maybe a lot more persecuted than we are here in Canada, where it's his grace is sufficient for them because his power is made perfect in their weakness. when they are powerless to, when they, you know, they're not supposed to have a church. They have to meet in someone's basement, super secretive.
Yep.
God sustains them because they don't have any power in their city, in their country. So.
Yeah. I was looking through Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology.
Love it.
Remember that textbook? Last night, and like he kind of says in there, this might be paraphrasing, but like essentially that the proper response to understanding God's grace is faith.
Mm.
So it's like, oh, when we actually recognize that we are in need of grace, it's like that's where faith comes from.
Mm.
And so that's exactly it, right? Like it's these people who are recognizing that it's like, oh, like I need, like I'm weak, I am in need of something. God's grace like saves me, and so that's what leads us to the point of faith. And like there's this quote from Grudem, like if God's favor is to come to us apart from our own merit, then it must come when we depend not on our own merit but on the merits of another, and that is precisely when we have faith.
Hmm.
And so it's recognizing like I am not strong enough. I cannot save myself. It doesn't matter the good things that I do. All of that is irrelevant, filthy rags, in light of what Christ has done. And when we see that, that is what brings us. It brings us to saving faith, to just rest in a work that's already been accomplished. And like that's kind of the crazy thing too, is like we're not talking about something that's like, man, one day this is going to happen and that's going to be what frees us. It's like we're talking about a work that's already done.
It's accomplished.
It's finished.
It is finished. It is finished. Honestly, yeah. And I think this is a good place to kind of wrap up this topic of grace. And for the listeners, it's just be encouraged that, you know, days come and go, you know, some days aren't as good as others, but we are always under the grace of the common grace of God. And if you have surrendered your life to Jesus, then you are under that saving grace of God. And, you know, tomorrow you might wake up and try and do it all yourself, and then the next day just feel super discouraged because it's like, why do I feel like I just am running and running and running and never getting anywhere? And then the Lord nudges you to, you know, whatever it might be, and you're like, oh man, God, I need you so bad. Just, yeah, I don't know. What are your final thoughts?
Well, I feel like I we're in the midst of a wrap-up stage, so I'm like, oh, can I ask you one more question? I think I can. But it's like, how do you actually practice like reminding yourself of grace? Like I mentioned, like preaching the gospel to yourself, which I feel like is probably the best answer. But what does that actually look like for you? How do you practice preaching the gospel to yourself in your life, Luke?
Yeah, I think my mental propensity, my mental kind of pattern is to be very hard on myself and expect a lot from myself. And so, you know, it's a lot of like, if I'm feeling anxious or uncertain about things, or, you know, feeling like I've messed up, it's like, Lord, just help me remember that, you know, I just need to do the best that I can. Some days my best is better than other days. Lord, help me to continue to do the best that I'm able to, you know, with wherever I'm at that day. But remind me that it's okay that my best is never actually good enough. Remind me that it's okay that I, in and of myself, don't necessarily feel like enough, because I'm not. And that's where I should land at the end of every day, in a positive way, that I'm not enough, that God, he's the one that's enough. Christ is enough. Like that song, like Christ is enough for me. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, when I put my head on the pillow, and in the morning when I wake up, I think those have become a practice of mine where it's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to do the best that I can today, but Christ is enough for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how I live that out. And, with my wife and I, that's what we've been trying to practice a lot, because we have a similar kind of mental process of self-criticalness. And so it's reminding each other and encouraging each other, like, you don't have to do it all. Mm. Christ is enough, and Christ has accomplished anything and everything that's needed to be accomplished. Just keep following him to the best of your ability. Amen. What about you?
God.
Same question right back at you.
Nice. Wow. I see what you did there.
Easy. It's too easy.
You're a pro at this. So much of what you said, I think, is true. Like, it really is that, like I love that just idea of, like, in the morning as I wake up and at night as I go to sleep, it's reminding yourself of those truths. I think, like, so much too, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I think it applies here. Like, it's just also the importance of having, like, brothers and sisters in Christ, like, around us regularly, mm-hmm. which obviously is, like, first and foremost, like, why we need to be in the local church, because it is in the church that I think we get to come together with other believers and acknowledge that we do a crappy job of serving the Lord and following him. Like, but there's something about, like, coming together in that to acknowledge that, and then to remind each other of the truths of the gospel, like, face to face.
Yeah.
That I think is, well, I think it's necessary. It's God's plan, right? It is like his plan for the church is that, you know, we would be able to build one another up in love and in good works. And so, yeah, I feel like even as we were talking, like, my mind's also just going to this question of, like how do we avoid, like, making grace cheap?
Hmm.
Like, how do we keep from just being like, oh man, I'm probably going to sin, I guess, a bunch tomorrow, because I know that I'm prone to do it. And so, here I go, kind of deal. But I think it's, like, again, just, like, answered in, like, having community around us, having people to hold us accountable, having people to remind us when we stumble, like, of God's grace that's for us. Mm-hmm. And I think just, yeah, having believers in our lives that we can turn to, and that we can, just share gospel truth with, becomes, like, so crucial and so important.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because we're so quick to forget.
Mm.
Right? We're prone to wander, and we are prone to forget. And, like, primarily God has given us his word as a reminder. But he's also given us each other. And so I think both are important, to be spending time in God's word. It is how we know him, how we know his character, how we know the way that he calls us to live. It shows us his plan for the world, the hope we have for eternity. And also, like, he's given us the beauty of community of believers. And so I think I often need to just make sure that I'm finding time to just walk with brothers and sisters, both to encourage them and to be encouraged by them.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me has to be a regular practice too. So. Yeah,
I love
long-winded answer there.
Very but. Long final thoughts, but that's,
we were wrapping this thing up 10 minutes ago.
That was the question that we had talked about when we first started talking about this episode, and I totally forgot about it, so I'm glad you remembered.
Can't remember scripture references sometimes, but...
It's okay. We're not perfect.
Out of questions.
We are not perfect. Thank you if you are still listening to this point.
They were probably like, man, this thing's ending, and then just stopped it.
Yeah, maybe. But here we are. Thank you so much. Yeah, surrender, you know, your day, your thoughts, your actions to God. Remind yourself of his grace and his kindness towards us. And just, yeah, God is so good. Christ is enough for you. And so with that, sustain you into your next week, whatever kind of circumstance you're in at the moment. Would Christ be enough for you? And would you be willing to ask God for help when you need it? We'll see you next time.